words.
Obviously, there are tools in the book. And one of the things that we were discussing earlier was that it's no point picking up the book and going to a chapter that looks exciting. Mm. Let me just ask you, Scott, why do you suggest that the book needs to be started from the beginning? Why can't I just home in on a chapter that I think will deal with whatever I'm going through at the moment?
It's really important, this, Angie. You must start from the beginning because the way that you learn everything in there is in layers. So you've got to learn what you learn in chapter one about how your brain works and how you can change some of that in order to learn properly what's in chapter two. So it's all in stages. And if you go diving into the book in the middle, you'll have missed out on all of that layering and some of it won't make sense to you. Because what your brain is like a muscle. The more it does something, the better it gets. So if it falls into the habit of thinking in solutions rather than in problems, for example, if it falls into the habit of thinking, is there another way I can approach this if this one's not working, the better it will get at doing that. And the book is written in such a way that there are psychological techniques in the writing which will start persuading your brain to start thinking about things in a more useful way for you. No joke, it's all in there. And we explain them at the beginning of the book. There are some parts of the book which will come across as ever so slightly confusing at times, but that's all there for a reason, to get your brain functioning in a different way that works better.
Okay.
And that's kind of revealed at the end of the book as well. But you shouldn't go to the end.
I was
going to
say, but isn't there a part near the beginning where you... Oh, right, here we go. To start with, here's the end.
Yeah. So we put the end of the book at the beginning.
Okay.
It will make sense.
I do believe it will. Now, there's one other scenario I want to put to you. We've done the professional. Let's do the personal. Mm-hmm. Male, female, in a relationship, being abused, verbally, mentally, in whatever way. Let's just take Sharon. She's got two kids. She's madly in love with her boyfriend, but he keeps on physically abusing her. Mm-hmm. She wants to go because she doesn't want to keep on being physically abused, and it's upsetting for her, it's upsetting for the kids, but she just can't tear herself away. How will Sharon change her mode of thinking to free herself without the guilt when she walks away?
Well, there are a couple of things going on. The first thing that's going on is a conflict, if you like, between what's going on in a conscious, logical brain and what's going on in a heart or a gut feel. So they're in conflict. So her gut's saying, I know this is wrong. I know this guy's abusing me and I know that is wrong.
Right.
But her brain's probably saying, well, for the sake of the kids, I know he loves me in some way, I should stay together. So there's this conflict going on. First thing you need to do is align the two things, get both conscious and unconscious saying the same thing. And to do that, you need to figure out what the secondary benefit is of staying with the person. So if we call him John, John and Sharon, if we call him John, John gives Sharon something at a subconscious level that makes her stay with him. Okay, so that could be, you know, some form of love. So the simple answer is, can Sharon get love from somewhere else? Is there another John waiting in the wings? Is there another way that she can experience love?
What if, as a result of being with John, she is afraid to move on in case the pattern repeats itself?
Sure.
And so she thinks, well, hey, as a lot of us do in some scenarios, better the devil you know.
You've hit the nail on the head. Yep. Pattern.
Okay.
Right? The most important thing for Sharon to do is, first of all, to identify that she's in a pattern which is not helping her.
Okay.
And to change that pattern so that when she does get out of this relationship, she doesn't repeat it. Mistakes are okay as long as you make them once. But you've got to learn how to recognise that mistake. Otherwise, you will keep repeating that however many Johns you meet through your life.
And I would say this is where a good self-help book comes in, because it can be objective and it can be that pattern breaker, if you like. Because your best friend, with the best will in the world, might say, oh, you know, you're with the wrong guy. But you just don't listen to them because, you know, they've got some form of, they're not objective enough, is probably what I'm trying to say. But a book is impartial, it's dispassionate, and it's objective. So to see things in the cold light of day, reading things in black and white will help you see that for what it is. Then you can begin to break the pattern. But if you stay in your circle of friends or just go to the same places for advice, then you're not going to recognise that you're in a pattern. So you need something external.
The most important thing to remember, I guess, is, you know, this book does not know you. This book has no stake or investment in you. All it does is say, if you're in trouble, do this. Or if you want something, do this.
So are you then saying, Scott and Mark, that we're all the same?
I think we're all very different, which is why we need something to refer to at times. And that thing should be static. It shouldn't know you. It shouldn't have any emotional connection with you. But when we're in doubt, we need the manual. It's a bit like, you know, we can all probably cook to a certain extent. And even a really good cook will probably have a copy of one of Delia's books on the shelf. So that when you get all confused or when something stopped working,
you refer
I can
to
go
it.
Back to the manual.
Okay. There's two other areas I want to touch on you, because what I'm picking up here is that even though the brain controls us, if we use it properly, we have the power to control a percentage of it. Do I have that that right?
Yeah.
Okay. We spoke earlier in the week about a scenario of, okay, my daughters at the moment, I don't know why, but every time they see a mini, they go, mini hit. And I keep seeing minis, whether I'm with them, if I'm out shopping, wherever. Why do I keep seeing minis now? What is going on? I never noticed minis before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if I was going to buy a BM, I'd probably see loads of BMs. Why am I seeing these things now?
This is, I mean, to go back to the secret that we touched on at the beginning, this is why the secret, the book, works, because you're setting a filter. So, for example, if I said, you know, I am going to buy a mini tomorrow, suddenly I walk out of this building, what do I see everywhere? Minis, 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 a bit like your daughter's. Because I've said to myself that I'm buying a mini, so my awareness of that particular thing goes through the roof, whether I know it or not. That's how the secret works. It opens your mind to look for certain things, and you find certain things. And sometimes they're not always there. I mean, you know, if you're clairvoyant, some of them are known as charlatans, and if they say, you know, I see a dead relative in the room, you only remember what you want to hear, because you walk in that room wanting to speak to a dead relative, so you'll remember the things that they pick out that happen to be true, but you'll forget the things that aren't true. That's how filters work. So you set your brain as a target, like an Exocet missile, and it'll seek out those things if you tell it to. And that's how you're seeing minis all the time. If you were going to buy a Beetle tomorrow, then that would change to Beetles.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. But that's a useful tool if you want something out of life. If you want to look for opportunity, if you want to look for solutions in your life, then you just set a filter and say, well, you know, I want a better job, or I want a better partner. Then your mind is open to seeing those things in your life.
Let me give you an example, actually, Angie.
Do, Scott.
I mean, if you're wherever you are when you're listening to this, look around the room that you're in, and look for all of the flaws in the room. F-L-A-W, flaw, yeah. Right? All of the things that are wrong with the room. Now, that might be a chip in the paintwork. It might be a cobweb. It might be nicotine stains on the ceiling. I don't know what they are. But you'll see the things about the place where you are that could be better. Okay, now I'm just going to say, do something completely different. Look out the window for a second, and now look back at the same room and look at all the things that are right with the room, the things you like about the room. You're just changing your filters now. So why, if you take the book, The Secret, or Cosmic Ordering, it's another one.
Yes.
Okay, what it does is it says, you know what, I think you should decide you want to be happy. Or I think you should decide that you want to have money. That's not as bonkers as it sounds. Because if you set your filter to spot the opportunities to be happy or
then
to
you'll
make
be
money,
happy.
Then you're going to see more opportunities. If you're telling yourself all the time that life is a bit of a... that life's dealing you a bad hand, let's put it that way. If you're telling yourself that, then you will see the things that are wrong with your life. You'll have set the filter to see the things that actually aren't doing you any good. So really, you do need to set your filter to look for good opportunities to be happy. The books, The Secret, and all the others will do that. Our book will then say, now that you've set your filters, here are some specific techniques to help you get what you want on a day-to-day and practical basis. And, you know, that's from the really big stuff like a new career, a new job, a new relationship, down to the really small everyday stuff like get a refund for something that they don't want to give you a refund for.
Yes, I noticed that. There's a line, or that there's a feature in there that talks about even positioning yourself to get served first at a crowded bar.
That's right.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, well, if the bar's crowded, then surely the barman's going to serve people one at a time. Why is he going to overlook those in the front of the bar? To me, at the back, going, oi.
Yeah, so what do you normally do when you want to get served at a bar?
Wait, my turn.
Don't you go, oi, and wave a tenner in the air, go and serve, you know, and make eye contact and look at me and serve me next, that kind of thing?
I tend to wait my turn.
Okay. Maybe you do.
There is
a queue at the bar.
Right.
Okay, we don't know there's a queue, but there is a queuing system and people roughly know that, you know, that someone was there before them or someone's going after them. But if you're anything like me, I used to just wave a tenner in the air and look hopefully at the barman and say, pick me next, or certainly give off that impression.
Mm.
And it never used to work, and they used to just avoid me. I don't know why, and I never used to get served. So
you've changed your tactic.
I've changed. It doesn't work all of the time, but my success rate has gone up considerably. So all you have to do, this is about matching, cause it's a subconscious match, or building rapport with the barman from afar. So you know when you walk, I'll give you another example. You know when you walk down the street and you sort of, you've got someone coming towards you, let's say it's on a high street, you sort of go left to move out of the way and they go the same way, and you go the other way and they go the other way, and you're going like this, and it's almost like a tango down the street until you finally bump into each other.
Yes.
What's happened is you've built subconscious or unconscious rapport without knowing it with that person. That's why you're able to anticipate each other's move as you walk down the street, to the point you sort of bang into each other. Now, this is an ability that we all have, and we've all had since, you know, time began, and it sort of stems from caveman days, and you know, we need this ability to be liked by other people. So all this is bringing that ability to your conscious awareness, so you can use it to get people to build rapport with you. If I've got rapport with you, then you're more likely to serve me first over and above everyone else. Now, the crucial part to this, Angie, is if the barman's feeling a bit stressed, I've got to match his state, his kind of mood, if you like. So I've got to look and be and behave slightly stressed. If he's really happy and, you know, outward looking and jumping all over the place, I've got to do the same. So I'm just matching him non-verbally, and then that way we're building an unconscious level of rapport, and he's more likely to serve me first.
Because unconsciously or subconsciously, they're the same thing.
Whatever you want to call it.
He will spot you. He won't know that he spotted you, but if there's next time you do it, the next time you're with anybody, match the mood that they're in, right? You can see what mood they're in. Just match it. If they're slightly agitated, think of a time when you were last agitated. It's not an acting thing. It's not act. It's think of a time when you really were agitated.
Okay.
Remember it, and that will make you a bit agitated just by remembering it. Then what will happen is the other person will pick up that you're a kindred spirit at this point. We've all been in a situation, it doesn't work, does it? If you're down in the dumps and someone goes, cheer up, it just doesn't work, right? It's going to make you even more down in the dumps, or perhaps annoy you. And that's because that's a mismatch. The way that you can cheer somebody up is actually just to think of a time when you were a bit down in the dumps.
And come down to their level.
And come down to them. And once you're with them, then you can take them back up with you and very, very gently cheer them up. But you don't go in as a chirpy, happy chappy if someone is like Eeyore. You know, it just doesn't work. And so this is the same principle. You get served at the bar by matching the mood of the barman, and he will automatically gravitate towards someone who's in the same state of mind as he is. Actually, look, before you go on, Angie, I've got to tell you this. This is really good fun, and it is in the book, but there's a trick you can play on people using the same technique. Right, so you're on the tube.
Yeah.
Choose someone who's sitting opposite you, if you're lucky enough to have a seat, right? And match their mood, right? Just think, what mood are they in? You know, do they look bored, tired, hassled, whatever it is, and think of a time when you were like that,
okay,
right? And watch physically as they begin to match you without knowing it. So if your legs are crossed, they'll cross their legs. It's the body's unconscious way of sending out signals, I come in peace. You know, this is from caveman days that we needed to go into rapport with people. And you can play that trick all the time. You can get people to match your body language, or you know, the technical expression is your non-verbal communication. You can get people to do that just by matching their mood. The tube here in London is a brilliant way of doing it. While we're on the tube, there's a technique in there also. You know, do you remember years ago, they used to say, let passengers off the train first. And that was kind of what we all did.
Yes.
Have you noticed that's gone? It's changed.
Very much so, yes.
The rule book has changed on that sense. There is a technique for when you get off the tube to make them part in front of you, like the Red Sea before Moses.
What page?
Jumped, actually, should we tell her? Let's give this bit away, right?
Go for it.
This is how you do it. When the doors open and you want to get off and there's a whole crowd of people about to surge onto the train, okay, just pause for a fraction of a second longer than you would normally pause. Just stand still and look ahead confidently.
Not look at the people, look ahead.
Look ahead and pause for a tiny bit longer than you would. And they will all pick up on it straight away and allow you off the train first.
Try it.
I'm going to try it. I am going to try it.
Just breathe in. That's the best way to do it. Just breathe in when the doors are open, when you should really be taking a step forward, and watch the Red Sea part.
And we're only talking about a second, probably, at most. It'll seem longer because you're standing there and you'll feel compelled to step forward, but just get over that, just stand there for a second and then move forward.
Well, I shall definitely try it when I'm next on the tube. So, Mark Palmer, Scott Solder, co-authors of You Need This Book to Get What You Want. It's the first book of Angie's Book Club on Magic's website. Now, if people are interested in your seminars, because you've written the book, but there's also seminars that you do and there's techniques on your website, isn't there? So where would we go for information on this?
That's right. If you want to sign up to the You Need This Book Club, and that gets you free techniques and tips that are not in the book, so it's all extra material.
Why aren't they in the book?
Well, we weren't allowed to publish them, basically.
There are bits.
It's all the outtakes.
The director's room floor, isn't it? And extra things that we're putting together all the time. So some really sort of good everyday stuff.
It's really interactive as well, because we're getting readers sending their stories, their experiences in on the techniques that they've used. And we actually had one on the tube the other day using the matching rapport that we spoke about. So it's readers' experiences, and we're sharing that on our website. So
and that's, you know, come and get involved and join in, and I'm, you know, you won't regret it. The website is www.youneedthisbook.co.uk.
Lovely. Scott, Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for allowing me to make You Need This Book the inaugural book of Angie's Book Club.
Thank you, Angie. Thanks.